Welcome to the Be Connected podcast, where we're sharing ideas, insights, and stories that are shaping the world around us. Today, we're meeting with Pragya Gupta, who's actually started Multicultural People in Property, which is a fantastic group that is connecting people in the property industry, particularly those who've migrated to Australia. We're going to be sharing her story of how her migration story, how she's actually evolved her career in her time here, and then also what Multicultural People in Property are doing. Pragya has had a fantastic journey as one of those people that just gets stuff done. So let's jump on in and let's hear a lot more about this fantastic initiative. Hello, Pragya. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I really look forward to having this discussion. So just a bit of insights. Pragya and I had obviously met when we worked at a company called Grey Puxon together. And even in the last, I think it's 7 years that we've known each other, I've obviously seen Pragya do incredible things, including starting a group called Wine and Shine that actually connects women in the Melbourne property industry. And then she's gone on to actually start with another group of other people, Multicultural People in Property. And that's really what we want to talk about today. So Pragya and I have shared a lot of interest and passion together in diversity, equity, inclusion. And I think you've been doing some fantastic things. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Sejan. And thanks for this opportunity. And obviously, we've known each other for quite some time. And it was really good to work with you, having the same passion, sharing the same passion of expanding the DEI when we're working at Grey Puxon, and now that we are doing it at our own ends, which has been great. And I'm quite excited to have this conversation and spread out the word and inspire more people, hopefully.
Well, I think you've made a massive difference. I mean, you and I had a conversation. I think I reached out to you, right, when I sent somebody your direction. You know, I spoke to somebody and they told me about the experience that they had. They essentially felt that they had been discriminated against just in application processes and were quite worn down. Unfortunately, I meet a lot of people and have those experiences. And it's been really lovely to be able to go, okay, I can't change that, but here is a group of people that you can connect with, and here are some things that are going on. You shouldn't be made to feel that way. Things shouldn't be operating in that way. So let's have a little bit of a chat. So you moved to Australia 9 years ago. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you're originally from, your family, everything like that.
There's a lot to unpack there. Yes, moved to Australia 9 years ago, got married and moved here, in short. But before that, so I'm born and raised in Delhi, India, and I'm a Hindu by background. Not very traditional myself, and my family is actually very pretty open. We live in the very, very, very deep end of Delhi, which is called Old Delhi, which is like...
Yes, I've been to Old Delhi. It's a beautiful part.
Yes, it is amazing. And so born and brought up there, did my schooling, education, and then did my architecture in Delhi. I come from a very business background family. So my dad had his own business, and they really wanted me to actually get married pretty soon, because coming from a very traditional Hindu family, they were like, oh, you know, do your schooling, get married early. And then that's like having a girl in a family is like, okay, that's their responsibility to get them married. But I guess I always say I never followed the rules. So I actually chose, I said, okay, Dad, at least let me do some education, get a little bit of education in the college, and then you can get me married as you want. So then he's like, okay, fine. He supported me. He wasn't against me, but he really wanted to just expedite the process of me getting married, basically. But then I chose architecture as my course, which was a
very long course,
which was the longest possible course at that point. He didn't know quite how much the extent of it. So I chose the course. 5 years of bachelor's alone is in India. Yeah. Chose the course, did the course. I'm like, he hung on for it. But then as soon as the course finished, I mean, he was like, okay, come on, it's time.
Okay. It just... she doesn't leave. Like, it's just things that I wouldn't even think about, because
To be very honest, he, like, both me and my dad and my mom, they have supported me all the way through, which was very unusual. I was probably the only person in my college that did internship in Dubai, and that was a big thing. So I actually went to Dubai, and we have a 10-month span of internship that we have to do. Literally, I didn't even had a passport at that point. So they were very supportive and open, and that kind of doing that internship in Dubai opened the doors or opened the world for me at that point, which was a great insight. I was in Dubai. It was
GFC hit at that time. The sizes there are just like, that's what always people are like, oh, people are Australian experience. I'm like, do you have any idea that our buildings are like helping buildings again, for their small buildings? It's not like
100%. Yeah. And at that time, Burj was getting built, Palm Islands were getting built. So I kind of got to see all of that. GFC happened kind of when I was finishing. GFC happened at that time. But then obviously I had to go back to the uni and finish my course, which was fine. Did that, started working, and I always kind of worked with global organizations. So although I was based in Delhi, but I've always worked with global organizations, which had offices across the world. So when people ask me, have you like, oh, you must have done a lot of projects in India. To be honest, I haven't done any projects in India.
I remember you said you actually worked majority. We were talking about this when we started remote teams and doing that. And you're like, yeah, I'm just used to working like this because 100%. Majority of my team is not in the country I'm in. So
So which was very fortunate again, because I worked across internationally. So I worked in Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand, because I used to get seconded to the teams. So basically the India office was more of a documentation arm, and the front end and the design part used to happen in the other global offices where the project is based out of and whatnot. So I used to go and work with the design team at their office, which was a great opportunity. You get to know how things get done. And, you know, culturally connecting with people there was another massive thing that happened to me. I loved I love traveling. So that was a big part of it. And then bringing back that design back to the team, explaining it and making sure that's kind of translated well. So that was a really challenging but very different sort of role. But like I said, yes, I had done that part of what we did in COVID way ago and, you know, coordinating with teams across the globe.
Yeah.
I had done that previously. So that was a really good experience. Did that for about 8-ish years, and then came time.
So look, before we talk about maps, let's have a little bit of a chat about the first thing that you did. So you actually obviously, you know, and in Grand Crossing, we're quite clear on pathways and making connections and things like that. But you first started a group called Wine and Shine. So tell me a little bit about where that idea came from.
So Wine and Shine, and I'll tell you, when I started at Grey Parkson or coming in Australia, obviously have no connections professionally or even personally. Like we don't have any, like I didn't have any friends, family, professionally didn't know much people. And I'm a person who like to know people, to be social and, you know, have that network, which I didn't have at that point. It was at Grey Parkson first year, and I was very fortunate to start this program called 500 Women in Property, which is a part of the Property Council of Australia program. And I didn't know what that involved. It just my name was put forward, and I took that opportunity. And that is, it's a program where they choose 500 women nationally across, and every woman has a sponsor. So it's not a mentor-mentee, but it's more of a participant and sponsor, they call here. And you go in, and it's really, you know, trying to expand that network and build that network and be able to really focus on what's out there and develop your skills, or like what it's almost mentoring, but more of a sponsorship point of view. And that was my opportunity I saw to really build my network. And I still remember first day, it was a launch event, and there were this, I don't know, enormous number of people in this room. I didn't know anyone, and I was like taken aback and overwhelmed. And I just had my sponsor with me, which I knew from my office. And at that point, he really helped me, you know, connecting with a couple of people, which was great. But then I'm like, as soon as I started talking to a couple of people, and everyone was pretty much the same, because people were like, oh, you know, I don't know any other people here. And I started connecting, and I made a couple of good connections at that event and kind of start following that through throughout the term of the program, which was for a year. And after the program finished, I really had connected with at least 10 to 15 women in the program, which was really good connection that I had built, which we had been talking to. And they were engineers, project managers, clients, developers, all across from different aspects of the industry, mm-hmm. even lawyers, even suppliers. So I'm like, okay, program has ended, but we can sure keep carrying on this. So I kind of set up a pub meet to catch up, and we did catch up, like 10 of us caught up and kind of did it once, did it the second time, and someone from the supplier like, oh, you know, I'm happy to sponsor the drinks. And that kind of happened. And then one of my friends who was just starting her art and craft business, who used to work with us as well.
More
creative is the business which she was starting. So I'm like, why don't you do a little activity with us? So, you know, we are all females coming up together, and we all love to do a little bit of, you know, why not?
Yeah, let's not make it just about drinking. But
Correct. So then we did a little activity there. That was the very first one, which we had about 15 of us, and everyone loved it. Everyone loved the art, the conversations, and the, you know, everyone enthusiasm, authenticity across the table. And then we're like, oh, when's the next one? And when a person asks when is the next one, I'm like, okay, now I have to do a next one. So, and that's how it kind of, I did the next one when, and then COVID happened, and we had about 35 people. Then I had no name about it. I was like, you know, it's just a meetup. We're just meeting up.
Yeah.
So, and COVID happened, and then I kind of tried to continue it, doing it online. And we did 3-4 online sessions. We did sessions, obviously all of these were sponsored, thankfully. So we had our lovely suppliers each time who could sponsor. And we did all these activities and we used to send packages to people's home with the activity.
Do you know what? I think that you did this during COVID.
Yes, we did this during COVID.
Actually took off during COVID. Isn't it?
So many. But this was really good. And we did first one, which we actually named as Wine and Shine, because we did a candle making workshop. And again, it was really supporting. There was one of the friends of friends who was starting her candle making business and really wanted to support her. So we called that session as Wine and Shine. So we sent a candle making hamper, a little wine bottle, a little bit of nibbles there were about 20 people. And we had 20 people on the screen and everyone making candles. And it was so nice. And we connected so well, carried on to through COVID. And then when COVID finished, we kind of, okay, let's do an in-person event. And now, so I have been doing that ever since. We have done, I think, about 14, if we include the online everything. Yeah, wow. And now we have to, I really have to limit the capacity to 100, because
I do see the limits, but it's limited to 100. Isn't that incredible?
Yes, I try to limit it, but obviously it is all sponsored. There's no ticket. Yeah. It's not a membership, nothing, and people do ask it. But it's really, and again, it was more the women I started meeting on my way through my journey while either working with them or, you know, connected at some networking events. I just include them, and I still do. I include them in my running list, and they become part of the Wine and Shine next event that's coming up. So we did one early this year. So I tried to do 2 a year, because obviously it involves a lot of work and energy and obviously a lot of things. But I still want to keep it very authentic. We still do some activity, if not more is involved, more creative is involved always, or if we get someone else. So I've tried to, you know, spread the love. It's always, and the connections, and people say this, I still have that first person who came in the first one, still does come to the events now. So it's always for me, keeping that connections genuine, continue them and nurture them. And only then you can really build strong network.
And I think that's we'll segue into that, because I think it's really important as a development thing for people. I think that people don't realize that your value is actually your network. The higher you go up in your, and I've had people say, oh, I'm looking at this. I'm like, you need to realize that as you go from being a senior, and this is some things that we try and develop and teach people and help it, is that you have to keep those. And I think one of the things that you're very good at doing is keeping those connections. And obviously you've started these groups, but you've always come with that intent of, you know, let's actually make that. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. And that's why I wanted to interview you, because I mean, somebody who's literally come into the country and known nobody in the industry, 10 years later, probably has a network in the hundreds to thousands across. Mm. And that's because you've actually also made the effort, but the intent is also to let's connect people. We actually enjoy this and people get that buzz. It's one of the things I absolutely love about the built environment, that people actually love to come together. And I think it's because at the end of the day, no project is built by one person. We can't achieve it unless we actually all come together and we interconnect. And it's a very, very big interconnect industry. Because it is very big, it means that a lot of people, if they're not at that director level or partner level, or whichever you want to look at your executive or the tier down, people aren't building those. But they need to realize those connections are actually exceptionally important from building all the way up to graduate, all the way up to director. And, you know, if you look at the partners of Grey Parks and you ask them their contacts, they've had them since they were juniors themselves and they've grown up to now being directors. But I think the great thing about your story is you have somebody who's come into the country, not known anybody, and actually being very proactive about that. It's very interesting to hear that story today because I didn't realize that's where it had come from 500 women and then going, okay, well, that's great, but surely we can connect and do that outside of this as well. And to do that. So I think that's a great segue into MAPS. Okay, so let's talk about multicultural people and property. It's something you and I had actually spoken about like a year ago, and we even spoke about how you'd even started up. So let's start from the idea and sort of where this came from for you.
So I did start a not-for-profit organization. It was registered December 2023. It's called Multicultural Association of Property Professionals. And kind of coming back from where I was starting the Wilmer Network and trying to do a lot of things after the 500 Women Property Program, one of the opportunity I got after that with PCA or the Property Council of Australia was I got selected, I nominated myself to be part of their Diversity Inclusion Committee.
Yes.
And I got selected in that. So it's a 2-year term. A lot of that time was during COVID and after COVID, but the kind of conversations and the kind of things we were discussing there was really eye-opening for me because the concept of DEI was very foreign when I was in India. Like no one even talked about or knew what DEI.
And we mean diversity, equity, inclusion.
Yes.
And now there's a belief sometimes, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. It depends on anyone.
Correct. So when I was part of the diversity inclusion committee at that point of PCA, we used to, like, as a part of the committee, we were really focusing on the gender element and having the 500 Women Property Program. We were focusing on, you know, they used to run the Girls in Property Program. There's a lot of good things that were being done. So that was amazing to see. And that kind of really opened my eyes and starting to know what happens across the industry from a DEI perspective. But then from there, when that finished and just kind of reflecting on my journey, myself, what I feel like, and more migrant people that I was kind of coming in touch with, one thing was quite clear that was missing or no one was talking in the industry or, you know, now that they have is the culture aspect, which is us, like people. All of us, we are in Australia, are all multicultural. We all have come from somewhere and we are have got that culture overlay. And I always say culture is something that makes you as a person. And that is, and people are the most important part of anything we do. But culture is one part we often ignore or don't even recognize or acknowledge. So that was a big thing for me. And I was like, how can we bring this to the forefront? How can we actually talk about people's journeys, people's culture, how that shapes people, but also at the same time, the intersectionality piece. Like it's not only culture alone or gender alone or inclusivity alone. It's everything meshed together because it's just the whole DEI piece is, we have to talk about it as a whole. We can't separate it. So coming back, I was like trying to figure out what's happening in the industry, really kind of researching, opening my eyes more and more what's happening around. And then I was like, I really want to start something and a group or a community where we can actually talk about all these things. And obviously people coming from different cultural background, they I've always seen they connect so much better because they've got those same stories, same experiences to share. And, you know, being myself being a first generation migrant, but even if you're a second generation, you would have seen your parents yeah. or third generation. Everyone is coming from somewhere yeah. Here. So I started talking to a lot of my women friends from the Vim Wine and Shine network. I actually did a whole series of coffee catch-ups with the like group of 10s and asking this question. This is what I'm thinking. What do you think? Is this a crazy idea if I want to start a group called multicultural? It wasn't called, but I want to do something like that. Yeah. And everyone was like, no, this will be great. This will be a good thing. And there's nothing like this. And if there was something, this will be a great thing. So, and people were like, oh, someone needs to do it. So I'm like, you know, I might be that someone. So let's just do it. And I was like, then put out a plan in place, ask the people who really want to commit to this as a founding committee. And luckily now we are a founding committee of six people, and there are six people who said yes to it, which I'm very fortunate for and thankful for all their, you know, support and hard work.
There's a few Grey Parks and connections in there.
Obviously a few Grey Parks and connections coming out of there as well, but also the industry connections that I made from there. So
let's talk about the committee and talk a little bit about that. I mean, you and I had obviously spoken a little bit, you know, I was talking about doing something the same type of thing with neurodiversity as well, and we had a little bit of a chat. And we talked about the different ways that different groups had been sort of put together. And obviously the easiest way is to, you know, in simple terms, go and create a company because it's not hard to register. It's a lot easier. But actually you went down that whole charity track and actually had that registered, which is a process in itself. As well.
Yeah, which was really good actually. When I look back at it, it took me almost a year. So yeah, it's not registered as a charity; it's a not-for-profit.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, and again, I didn't know the difference about it when I was doing. I'm like, oh, maybe they're the same thing, but actually they're not. So I think it was a very interesting process that in 2023 I went through a lot of research, a lot of learning. How do you actually start a company? How do you register a company? And obviously part of my founding committee, we have a lawyer. So she was very helpful. So that really helped. Carolyn, who is a lawyer, she actually helped a lot in that as well. But it was a whole process and it was a whole learning exercise, not only about how to register a company, but how do you do a website? How do you do your accounting? Because it is a proper organization that you have to run. And there's a whole admin part involved in it, as well as the events, which is a separate thing that people see in the forefront. But in the background, a lot of behind the scenes stuff that goes through is a lot. Setting up a logo. Let's do a logo. How do we want to do our marketing? So coming up with the comms and marketing plan.
Having started a business myself, I guess I'm nodding.
It was quite a process, which I actually really enjoyed. Learning is such a big thing. I just love learning all these things. Exactly. Now I know how to do a website, how to do this, how to do that. So going through all this was a challenge, but it was a really good challenge. And I'm like, oh, I can open a company now on the back of my hand. So that was a bit of a learning exercise for me. But we did. But when I started and coming this as an idea, I always was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it properly. I would not just, because I spoke with a couple of people from other groups who are doing amazing work and have started the groups. But I was like, if I want to really establish this, I want to do it as a proper company and instead of not being just something which is loose out there and, you know, people are not, more you are, you can establish yourself. It's a credibility part as well. So, and I was very fortunate out of the amazing property industry. Like I said, we have a big network. I was really fortunate to find some early sponsors in the first year, just trusting me potentially at the start, because obviously we had nothing to show forward, but also trusting the mission and vision that we have behind MAV, which is really supporting the multicultural people in the property industry and really acknowledging and empowering the people in the industry that are there.
Right.
So our very high level, the thought we had was we want to build a community to start with. And the idea was during the first year, we had a really great big launch event, had about more than 100 people, about 120 people, which was great. So you can really see the industry coming in. And we then after that, and we have an event coming this week, we have done 4 events throughout the year. We didn't want to overdo it as well, but really meaningful panel discussions is what we really wanted. Where, and we want to curate, and we have always tried to curate our panelists in a way who are leaders in the industry, but who can really talk to the topic. So for example, the last one was we spoke about culture pride, which is a big thing. Again, the intersectionality piece, which is people either talk about culture or pride, but that piece of culture
you have that to comes have together. It's a big thing, as we talked about. Look at the pressure you've had with your parents and marriage. Like, can you
exactly
imagine?
Exactly. So really building that community, and we can see today the conversations that we have. Every event we get generally more than 100 people. We have amazing sponsors who have supported us throughout, and the community that we have built, which includes not only the juniors but mid-level and the leaders. And to be honest, leaders are the target audience we want to. And often at times people think, is this for us? We want to call it multicultural, but when we say multicultural, it's for everyone. That is the base we want to really establish, that it, as much as the people who are migrating should be part of it or will be part of it, it's actually the people who have been here, who are the higher leaders.
Representing Australian community and all elements, but understanding the different experiences.
And I think we have got about more than 1,200 followers now. With the year, we had about more than 600 participants in the various events the year, and continue to build that. And this is now the next financial year coming up, and we're gearing up with really good initiatives. So the part was year one, we have built this amazing community, and we'll keep growing that. Currently in Melbourne, we get this question asked often, that are you in Brisbane? Are you in Sydney? Do you want to expand? Right now, we all are volunteers as a founding committee, and we all have got full-time jobs. So this is only coming after hours, late night or weekend hours that we spend in. So we really want to focus on Melbourne. But as a part of the next coming financial year, we are putting out 3 really good initiatives. And I'm just giving you a sneak peek now, which will be announced pretty soon. One is the Leadership Spotlight program, which we have soft launch already on our website. So we are really wanting to, what we are doing here, sharing the stories and journeys of amazing multicultural leaders, we will be spotlighting, and we do a blog every month.
And it's really important, because people who are coming up need to, or going through the struggles of that whole journey,
And one of the things is, what we have seen is, these multicultural people, all these people doing amazing things, but they're very introverted. They don't want to share about them as well. As much as, like, I am pretty, open and honest, I'll talk about it. But a lot of people don't feel, it's not comfortable, but they're just shy. They're just not open. So that's why we want to give that platform and really empower even the leaders to share their stories, which is hard sometimes, because people say, oh no, we don't feel like sharing, sort of thing. But unless we share, how can you actually empower others and spread the word? So that is one initiative we are putting forward. The second one, which is again based on our mission and vision, is again, we want to uplift that leadership, multicultural leadership in the industry. So we are putting out a pathway to leadership program, which is a training and workshop series of program across the year. And we'll be running in-person sessions and maybe some online sessions, which is really aimed at that mid-level leaders in our industry. And we want to kind of really uplift them to that senior leadership, because this is something that we have seen. A lot of the multicultural people, they get to that mid leadership level, but it's from the mid to the senior leadership is when you don't see that promotion happening. And that's the gap in our industry, because the stats say that how many multicultural leaders have we got or in exec positions? There are really not so many.
Oh, you can go onto websites and have a look.
Literally, like, and it is, and again, yes, we have been championing and talking about women being in the, leadership, which is great. And we have done a fantastic job, but still are keeping to do that. But yeah. How about multicultural women?
You should. I mean, so you can't have diversity, equity, inclusion. You can't talk about diversity without culture. Like, I'm sorry, but that's generally where we do talk about diversity is, yes, it's in different perspectives, but different experiences and life experiences and, you know, having worked in different countries. Like, I think it's the biggest shortcoming that Australia has, that you do not see on leadership panels the same representation as you see.
Exactly.
That's where I always measure is you've got to look across the Australian community. 100%. Does your organisation actually reflect that at all levels within your organisation, or as you've identified, there seems to be a ceiling and a gap?
Because a lot of migration being happening, we have got that in the juniors or maybe in that mid-level, but that's where it stops.
People have been senior and then being back to mid-level.
Yeah, correct. Correct. And that's what happens. But it's the leadership executive band that we really want to focus and try to empower to bring that representation across that. And that's only when you can have robust conversations at the board levels, at the exec levels, essentially. So that's a really good program that we're wanting to launch, and we want to really see that happening and flourish. And the last one, which is the third one, we are calling it a benchmarking series. So we are wanting, at the moment, we have done a bit of a research, and there's not a lot of multicultural benchmarking in our industry. We don't know the stats. We don't know.
That's very, very true. And most people don't. I mean, you have to force them with the WGA to even look at
Correct. But then,
There is a great app out there. I'll probably interview him, which is a diversity, equity, inclusion, but it's its own product. So different to what you're doing, but absolutely.
Yep. So we are hopefully trying to run a bit of might be 1 year, 2 year, because it is a big exercise. Mm. We're not going into research phase, but really we were calling it a benchmarking. So hopefully we can talk to the leaders of the industry and run some surveys and get a little bit of that grasp on what that multicultural statistics are looking like in our property industry. So really focusing on our industry. So these are three great initiatives we are wanting to launch in the coming year. And again, really sticking to our mission and vision and really wanting to do things around that. And yes, we will do events. We might do one amazing event end of year, but really focusing on the very doing.
I always find the events are great because they're a place that people can come and connect. But yes, you're also trying to change minds and educate and do that. So we often talk about when we do these events, it's great, but you sort of feel like you've got the preaching to the choir already converted, and you're like, yes, but I also need the other people to come
and
start to influence the way that we're thinking. However, I think it's really important because we start to, you know, see these conversations hopefully start to then happen internally and people start to become. But it's also empowering people to go, you know what, I don't need to hide this. I should be asking these questions.
Absolutely.
Okay. And that's how we change the conversation. Now, you and I both know that a lot of this also comes to having unconscious bias, right? I think I flip the other way. I generally am like biased on the other side. I'm like, that's where we need to be promoting more. But it's something that we have to start to get people, you know, to be thinking a little bit about this and understanding. But I think it comes from awareness as well.
100%.
First part. And I think that connection, the events and things are great, but it's how we do these through these other programs, these initiatives. And that's why we're doing this podcast, to be honest with you, to highlight some of the fantastic things that people are doing out there. Because I think it's great. 5 years ago when we were talking diversity and inclusion, it's always been a little bit of a tick box. I think everybody always goes, oh, gender. Oh, then, you know, I'm obviously part of the LGBTI community. We'll be talking to the other groups in that too. But it's like there's so many other elements. You know, we're missing accessibility. The industry is shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Absolutely.
Multicultures, I think, you know, and again, I work nationally and across Australia and New Zealand, and I can tell you it's different in each single city. It's very, very different.
Yes.
But we need to have these conversations, because that is 100% right. This is not a country. that unless you're Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, or I did for us First Nations, we've all migrated here and have a history of that. So we need to start to understand how we culturally all interact. Absolutely. And this is part of our culture. And I think it's one of the great things is that we need to celebrate that, but understand and have awareness. And that's the hardest thing I see is people coming into this country. The challenges that you have to go through to get into the country. You've talked about two sponsorships.
Okay.
Having to take generally three steps back and not be respected for when you're working in a much bigger economy and much bigger projects than having to take 10 steps back, let alone then feeling like you're constantly overlooked or because you know, English may be your second or third or fifth language, that essentially there's zero appreciation or understanding of that. And that's where I think that, you know, one, I always think people just need to travel more.
Yes, 100%. Bali, do not agree more.
And actually see the world, take your kids and see the world, understand that it's exceptionally important, but also talk to people in your organisation, understand their story and what it is. So even today, you and I have known each other and had conversations. It can be hard, you know, you're working away, but understanding what people's journeys are. I'm very fortunate because I interview people. I never recruited you, so I didn't get that story. I get that story. And often when we're interviewing people, go start straight from the Australian experience. I'm like, no. I want to go straight back. Why did you do this? Take me through everything, the projects that you worked with. And I think that's become something that's happened in Australia, that people just go, oh, well, you don't respect anything I did before here. So, you know, it's like you have to understand that's a breadth of knowledge and understanding and experience that somebody's had. But you're not going to have the personal experiences like we talked about. You're married. Yes. We obviously have had that conversation in the past because I've asked, but people not feeling uncomfortable as well. So,
and which is exactly what you're saying is a good part. Like that's what we have seen in MAP, even at events and the pre-networking, post-networking, the community. People actually are not talking about work, which is great, which is very unusual in a networking event because people end up talking about, hey, what projects you're doing and whatnot. What we see here is literally people talking about, where are you from? What is your cultural background? What festivals you celebrate? We actually did an event called Wear Your Culture. So you actually had to wear something.
Yes, I saw that. Looked amazing.
So, you know, people talking about what are your traditional outfits? How do you do this? So really learning about the people and what makes them who they are, because that is what we are. And like you said in interview, it's personality plays such a big role of a person getting hired, as well as, yes, your credentials are. But that personality really comes from how you have built up yourself and your cultural background. So really, really fortunate like these events, and that's really happened and organically. And because one, the events have got a panel discussion, and it's been really good to see that the panelists have been really raw in their conversations and people actually talking either about the discussion or about the panel discussion and really building up on that in the networking, or really just talking about each other, and which is the beauty of what we want to bring as a part of the cultural bit of the people, essentially.
And I think it's great because you've got to show other people what you're trying to do is also show other people who've had this journey and go through it, but nobody talks about it. Right.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the great thing. We're lucky in, you know, 2025, we're starting to now have conversations that we weren't having that we need to have to bring things out. And that's when we talk in diversity, equity, inclusion about the B, the belonging. That's, you know, you go into prior, you go into all these courses, it's all about belonging. That's it. That you feel that you can belong in a room, you can be there.
Yeah.
You can be your true self and bring your whole identity to work and do that. I mean, I think the simplest thing is I just love it. I mean, you're an amazing cook too, by the way. But, you know, when people come into the kitchen and I'm like, what is this? How did you make that? What did you use it?
Yes.
This is incredible.
I mean,
you know,
and everyone loves food.
It's always been.
100%. Everyone loves food. Who doesn't love food?
Yeah, that's right. So there's different ways. There's different ways that I think the great thing you're doing with MAPS, but there's different ways that people can do. And I think curiosity and feeling, not feeling awkward about asking things is actually important. And I was having this conversation in one of our earlier sessions, that the thing is we're losing this interrelatedness. So everybody's talking about not going into the office doing that. these are things that you do have those conversations with, have that conversation, ask somebody. But again, you do need to have the right environments to do that. And that's where the, you know, the old Friday night drinks or the lunches and things like that. Those water cooler moments are actually exceptionally important, having events like the MAPS events to be able to do that. So well done, Pragya. Now, we've been chatting for a little while, so we will round things up. Thank you so much for sharing all of your story and talking us a little bit about MAPS. It sounds fantastic what you've already done. I implore anybody who has any experiences, please do get involved in MAPS. I think it's a fantastic way. I think you will get a lot experience out of it. And I really look forward to seeing what else that you guys do. And obviously, you know, on a personal note, I'll always be there to help out in any way that I can. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. So thank you, Pragya, so much for sharing your story and sharing these fantastic communities and connection that you've provided, because, you know, that's what we're all about with this as well, and sharing your story as well. Now, we'd like to finish on one simple thing, which probably isn't as relevant here, but, you know, I like to get your idea. So if there is one book, movie, piece of material, one person to follow or do anything like that or share, is there anything that you would sort of share that we can, to people to educate, continue to evolve their thinking in?
It's really hard because I actually see a lot of people who are doing great things, and I just try to follow whoever is doing good things at that moment or whatever attracts me, because I'm not a person, so I'm not a book reader, so I'm not into books at all. So also because I one thing I do on the side as well, I do have an Instagram blog, so I'm an influencer on Instagram, so I do run a food and travel blog. So I do try to fit in a lot during my day, so I've got a lot of things to do.
If anybody knows you, though, you're exceptionally well organized but very friendly.
So I think for me, I always try to see in that moment or for what I'm looking at, who are these great people doing amazing things, and I try to really look in their journey or try to even connect with them, talk to them. For example, recently, and we've got Angela, who is now the chair of Development Victoria. I really admired her for quite some time, being a multicultural woman, being the CEO of Development Victoria. I really admired her. I really started looking into her, and I reached out to her and had a session with her. I'm like, can you be my mentor? So I reached out to her and can you be on our panel? And so she's coming on our panel in the coming event. So, you know, like when you're connected.
I think the tip is look at things, get into things. And number one, have no problems in reaching out.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's the thing that we can leave everybody with, that if they are, obviously, just reach out, get involved in MAPS if that's something. Reach out to Pragya. I mean, you are fantastic on social media, so let's be honest, you've got that down pat.
But also in general, I think don't be hesitant in reaching out to people. If you like someone or if you want to reach out to someone and have a chat, I think people are often quite open to mentor or even get some insight. It's not me. It could be, you know, Seaton. Seaton is quite responsive. She will, you know, come back to you, or anyone in the industry you're really wanting to get some get inspired, feel free to reach out and be open. It has to be out there to learn more. Only when you put yourself out, you'll get a lot more back.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that you have done. So I think that's really important. And being proactive in it too. Don't sit and accept what your career is and what you're doing. If you see a gap or you see something, you want to do something, go and create it and do it. And I think that's the great thing. We've got so many leaders and people who have, you know, decided this is what I'm going to go and do, and find other people. And I think that's what you've done with MAPS as well. Nothing that you've talked about, you've done today, you've done alone as well, whilst it's come out of things. But also follow up and do that. So once you meet somebody, don't feel like, oh, we shouldn't do this. Book it in. You know, book in that coffee, go and do that. If you want to, you met that person, reach out to them on that. Yes, people are busy. That's part of it. But I think the great part of the industry is that people do fully support that. Your leaders will always support you in connecting with people. But do it, because your network is your value in life.
And I always say, if you don't do it, you won't get it. So you have to be in it to win it. So just keep doing it.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Pragya, so much for all of your time. Really appreciate it. We'll just stop there. All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and subscribe. If you're liking this podcast, please rate it because it will actually help other people as well. Now, beyond being able to subscribe, we also have a fantastic newsletter. So if you go to the be-connected.co podcast, you will actually be able to sign up for a newsletter, and you will get this on a weekly basis with the latest podcast coming out twice a month and a fantastic newsletter that will give you great insights into the industry, interesting topics of how you can grow professionally and also grow your businesses. We hope you enjoy, and thanks so much for listening.